superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
After 5 years, Simply Superior is morphing into a new Wisconsin public radio show. We'll review some of our most memorable moments.
Hello, Wisconsin.
I think they might have been playing Hail to the Chief quite a bit in Superior.
Plus, he once managed a heavy metal indie record label. Now, he's a regular piano player at venues near you. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Over the past month, you've heard our announcements that Wisconsin Public Radio is changing. On May 20th, our two new networks will launch, WPR News and WPR Music, and you'll also see changes in the lineup of many of our shows. That includes this one, and next week, Simply Superior will be our last. But it's not the last you'll hear of me. I'll be presenting the same coverage twice a week as part of our new Morning Edition show. Next week, WPR's director, Sarah Ashworth, will be on to talk about the changes, but for now, we thought we'd take a look back at some of our highlights over the past 5 years. Here to walk down that memory lane with us, as both a listener from the beginning and as an occasional guest, is Linda Nervick of TwinPorts.com and a host of other affiliations. Welcome back to Simply Superior, Linda.
Hello, Robin.
So in the past 5 years, we've done hundreds of shows, usually with an issue during the first segment, followed by an entertainment piece, and then the news roundup. We actually had something of a musical valedictory last week with several performers who've been on numerous times who happened to be with us for Homegrown, so we got that taken care of. But today we want to look back at some of those issue pieces, and weather defines us around here, so can we start with the snow?
Well, after this season, I don't even know what snow looks like.
All right. Well, back in 2020, we did have snow, by the way, and I always was looking for a better way to get rid of it. So I found out in Montreal, and I'm sure you'll remember this, that they have a really innovative way of doing so. Here's the City of Montreal spokesman, Philippe Sommeron.
We have many land sites to store the snow. But we also using our sewer system to get rid of the snow. So we're melting the snow. Maybe 25% of the snow will be melt into the sewer of the Montreal city.
Mm-hmm. To melt it, how hot do the trucks have to get the snow? Yeah.
Sometimes we notice that we have more wastewater during the week when everyone goes into the office taking hot coffees, then they have to go to the bathroom. And so this is the way we're collecting warm water into the sewer of Montreal. And it's enough to melt the snow.
Oh, funny.
So what do you think of Montreal's plan?
I think it's fantastic. As a matter of fact, teamwork. It's all about the teamwork.
That's right. Well, neither Duluth nor Superior picked up on that idea, and I did encourage them. But something else Montreal does that Superior did adopt is clearing the sidewalks. And that's the idea that the city, rather than homeowners and businesses, should provide that as a basic service and that it helps everybody, okay? So Superior did start shoveling key sidewalks. And when I asked Mayor Jim Payne if he got the idea from our show, he didn't quite answer that question.
Well, I think it's a great idea, but I think the taxes that they pay in Montreal are a lot higher than they pay in Superior. So maybe that's from high taxes.
Ah, good point for the home team here. Well, moving on, and these are in no particular order. One thing Superior and Duluth in particular did pick up on was the Independent TV Festival, which was renamed the Catalyst Content Festival. And Linda, you are the one who invited me to the reception for Phil Gilpin, the executive director of the festival, when he brought it to Duluth from Vermont. Tell me about that.
Well, I thought it would be something very exciting that's happening in our area, and we all listened with such enthusiasm. And this was when Visit Duluth was behind this, and it seemed like it was just going to be taking off. Like we were going to have famous people all over, crawling all over the Twin Ports.
Well, you're absolutely right. I did hear all those wonderful projections. And one of the things we have in a clip here is that it would pump a lot of money into the area.
The city of Duluth will host a convention for Hollywood executives.
This was the excitement when the Independent Television Festival, now known as Catalyst, announced it was moving to Duluth.
$1.5 million is expected to be pumped into the
city. Our report ran in two parts in July 2019. The first, on July 5th, gave an overview of the organization's history up to that point. Part of that history includes a long-running deficit by the festival, which has never broken even since starting in Los Angeles in 2006 and heading to two different towns in Vermont before arriving in Duluth. Catalyst's executive director Phil Gilpin took exception to that report, calling it unfair, and he met with us to go through the organization's finances in detail.
This is where I wish you had really done more research and not stopped the clock in December 31st, 2017.
Sure.
Because it made it sound like maybe the organization had some type of, you know, financial problem or something. There's over seven-figure assets on our current balance sheet, but because the fact that you decided, Robin Washington says, oh, I can only go by the 2017 tax returns, there we go, now it ends, there you didn't look into what's been happening the last 18 months since then. You know, in terms of when are those notes are due and when are they paid off, almost all of them are already gone, and the ones that are there are there for a reason, and our balance sheet is entirely positive to a very large amount.
So that was Phil Gilpin in 2019 telling me that their indebtedness of over $200,000 was pretty much paid off by then. But we did another report, and the debt had grown to $400,000. The next year, they beat it back about $20,000. And Linda, we looked up their most recent filing, 2022, that was posted last November. And what do you think it said?
I think it said they made money.
Unfortunately, it does not. It says $629,000 in the red.
Oh, gosh.
So, you know, this you can't measure everything by money. We won't. And most importantly, we do want to hear all sides of the story. So, again, as in the past, Phil Gilpin is invited to come back and discuss it on our future Morning Edition show. So moving on from that, that wasn't the only investigative piece we've done. Probably our most viral story ever was what we did a month ago on Kathy Cargill, the Duluth Park Point homebuyer billionaire who turned out to be an ore docker who grew up in Ashland. At the Ashland Family Restaurant, that's really its name as well as its description, I didn't have to bring up her name. Either is Kathy Cargill or Kathy Popsahala.
Yeah, I've seen her once in a while.
You guys know her or knew her?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, I knew her pretty well. Very nice lady. Never had an issue with her.
She's done a lot of good. She did a lot of good for people here in town. You know, built houses for people and gave it to them.
Oh, yeah.
People that never would have had anything.
Are you serious about that?
I'm serious.
The diners gave me the exact address and the name of Kathy's friend, and it appeared to check out. The house looked newly constructed and sat on bare ground that hadn't been sodded yet. The owner wasn't home, and finding we had a common friend, I asked that person to call her to verify the story. But the response was no comment. I also visited the current Pasahala Towing, run by Kathy's brother, Mark. He shared the family history. There were two boys and two girls, though prefaced it by saying he and his other sister were involved in a legal dispute with Kathy, who he'd barely seen in years.
I haven't seen her for probably 35 years, I suppose.
Oh, wow.
I've seen her at my dad's funeral, and that was it.
I see. Right.
So, other than that, not much else to say. You know, I don't know her side of anything.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young growing up, because she's the third in the family, there's me, Mike, and Kathy, and then Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Carol's mother is the oldest.
So if it's 30 years, you've never met the Cargills or anything like that, right?
No.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Money's nice, but you know, when you're horizontal, that money ain't gonna do you a bit of good.
So, Linda, what did you think of that, and did it change your view perhaps from what was previously widely reported of her buying houses on Park Point and calling them crap and tearing them down and being a rich outsider with not a very good image?
You know, I felt like she was one of us. And it goes to show you, you can't get a, you know, go through life without having a few things that were mishaps. And then that makes us all real.
It doesn't make us all billionaires, but yes, it does mean that there might be more to us than we see on the surface.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Twin Ports publicist extraordinaire Linda Nervick of TwinPorts.com and many other affiliations. She's been both an occasional guest and definitely a listener since day one on the show. We're going through some of the highlights over the 5 years of Simply Superior. The show's ending next week, but I'll be on bringing you the same material in our morning edition broadcast. Well, going back to the lighter fare, a little bit less investigative, although I have to say I certainly learned a lot thanks to you. Can we stop and smell the flowers? And what could I possibly be talking about?
Lilac Love Fest. We have the longest lilac season in the world.
Here in the Twin Ports?
Here in the Twin Ports. We have the longest lilac season in the world. And we proved it since we were on your radio show.
Well, here's a clip of you in someone's backyard in Superior investigating their lilacs.
Oh, here comes someone. I'm going to talk to them. I think he's the owner of this house.
I have a quick question. We're recording this for a Wisconsin Public Radio. And I'm Linda from the Lilac Love Fest. And what is your name?
Peterson. George Peterson.
George Peterson. And this is your house here?
Right there.
Right here. And are these your lilacs?
Probably planted around when the house was built, and that was in 1888. They're Persian.
Persian lilacs?
Yeah, they're old. They're an old variety. Then I got the double lavenders, double reds, double whites, all French. Then I have one in there called the Abraham Lincoln. It's supposed to be the nearest to true blue, and it is.
Oh, wonderful. Well, it's a beautiful house, and your lilacs are gorgeous.
Aren't they nice?
They are. That's awesome. Thank you, sir.
Yes, it was George's house. Adam Cipolla and Wendy Derwachter made a little jingle for me.
So we're not the only ones running around with a theme song.
Exactly. Lilac Love Fest, longest lilac season in the world. Everyone should have a theme song.
All right. So Lilac Love Fest is still going on?
The Lilac Love Fest is going strong, and we are bringing more events each year. We are doing two trains on the North Shore Scenic Railway in June. We do yoga at Fitger's every Saturday morning in June. We've involved Gordy's. Garden Center is going to be doing specials with lilacs, and the news media has really been embracing this. It's a lovely community event.
All right. Well, let's go back to the weather and more of your affiliations. And you're one of the longtime boosters of the bear grease. We did and didn't have the bear grease and a Berkey binder over several years because of either lack of snow or the pandemic or both or what. So looking back and maybe looking toward the future, are we going to be back on track with those races?
You know, it's going to be very interesting to see how we all go forward with this. And the good news is we have social media and we have radio and we have these things where we can get the news out and let people know what's going on. And I think people get kind of excited whether it's going to be called off or it's going to be on. And then we get sometimes, like 2 years ago, we had just so much snow. We didn't know what we could have had a dog sled race in the late March.
Unless we were in Montreal and we all took a bathroom break at the same time, right?
That would be Montreal.
Maybe the dogs could do that. Okay, we're going places we shouldn't on a radio. Well, along those lines, let's talk about the events that did go off without a hitch. The annual 4th of July events throughout the region were pretty much normal, even during COVID. And though I didn't expect it, I ended up talking to one of the premier conductors in the world about why we play the 1812 Overture, which in fact celebrates a victory of America's enemies in the War of 1812. We'll be right back. So Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture has become the mainstay of 4th of July celebrations across the country, but I've long had a question about how it became connected to the American holiday. Well, we've traced those performances back to the first one presented by what has to be the premier orchestra associated with the work, the Boston Pops. And here joining us from Boston to tell us the story is the conductor of the Boston Pops, Keith Lockhart. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you, Robin.
So there's universal agreement that the Russians and the British were on one side and the French and the Americans on the other. Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture is celebrating the defeat of the French in Russia, isn't it?
Yes. Well, you know, I suppose I should answer that question with a question. And why does any tradition become a tradition? It is true. Your history is more or less correct there. The 1812 Overture of Tchaikovsky was written in the 1880s to celebrate a Russian victory over Napoleon's troops in that war of 1812. But nonetheless, it has become really nationwide a proud part of most people's 4th of July celebrations. It dates back to, I believe, 1974, when Boston businessman and entrepreneur David Mugar, who was a good friend of Arthur Fiedler, the conductor of the Boston Pops at that time, and one time, Fiedler was a little distressed because the attendance on the Esplanade, where we have offered free concerts to the people of Boston since 1929, was beginning to tail off a little bit. And David Mugar said, "What's that piece by Tchaikovsky that has the cannons and the bells in it?" and Fiedler said, "Well, that's the 1812 Overture." And he said, "I think if you do that, people are going to love it." And so they started doing it. People did love it. And this was first seen by the whole country in 1976 in the televised bicentennial concert. And it kind of took off.
Robin, how did you get Keith Lockhart?
I actually just called the Boston Pops and he called me right back. And in the end of the conversation, he mentioned On Wisconsin as a alternative theme we might play. So what else big happened around here in that time, Linda?
Well, I think they might have been playing Hail to the Chief quite a bit in Superior.
Yeah, like twice?
Twice.
Hello, Wisconsin. Yeah. From across the bay, hello, Minnesota. Yeah.
I think he likes the place.
A lot.
Right? And the first time was after the State of the Union address in 2022. And then he came back last January. The White House actually asked me if we wanted to speak with the former Democratic Party chair, Tom Perez, who's now a Biden aide. And I said yes, because I thought I might stump him, being journalistic here, about if he ever really had been to our area. Here's his answer.
I personally heard of the Blatnik Bridge probably 40 years ago because my wife is from Wisconsin. We spend a lot of time in northern Wisconsin. We've also spent a lot of time up in the Boundary Waters, and we often stay in Duluth or Superior. So we're crossing the Blatnik Bridge with regularity. This announcement from the president about the infrastructure investment to replace the bridge is a real game changer.
So, Linda, should we be surprised that Tom Perez turns out to have known all about our area?
Maybe he's the one that's telling everyone in Washington.
Well, I think Biden certainly got the message. All right. Well, hands down, our most memorable person on the show was someone who went to school with Richard Bong and knew John Blatnik personally. Isabel Tucson of Superior turned 102 in 2019 and was gracious enough to let us spend some time with her. People ask you all the time, I'm sure, to what do you attribute your health and your well-being?
Keeping busy. To me, I think that the biggest secret of everything is keeping busy and get kind of nosy, know what's going on in the world. And as long as you keep your mind going, you're all right.
And her son Barry tells me that she is most decidedly still keeping her mind going at age 106.
Fantastic.
Well, we've been keeping our minds going, taking a walk down memory lane in the 5 years of Simply Superior with our guest, Linda Nervick. Thank you for joining us, Linda.
Thank you, Robin.
Coming up, he's a pharmacist who once managed a heavy metal band and now tickles the ivories at a venue near you. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Owen Pilifka is a retired pharmacist living in Cornucopia. While he's no longer filling prescriptions for physical wellness, you could say he's filling them for the soul with his music. He was involved in the music scene before retirement, helping shepherd an indie record label, and got serious with his own playing and composing since then. And now he appears regularly the first Friday of every month at Thirsty Pagan Brewery in Superior and other locations. And he joins me now. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio, Owen.
Well, thank you for having me.
So before we get to your story and music, I want to tell people how you got here, which is you responded to our on-air invites for musicians to join us on the show. And as we just heard, this is one of our last shows in this format. So, Owen, you made it in the nick of time.
I'm just under the wire.
All right. Well, your music is instrumental piano. Do you sing also or no?
No, that would be, people would leave the room in droves if I sang.
That puts you in a category with me. And people think, while we're talking about the show, that I was singing the theme song to the show, but that's actually Bruce Nelson of Solon Springs, and he's going to be on next week to sing it one more time.
Oh, cool.
Well, I'm imagining that your work is a lot different than the indie artists I read about you working with. Tell me about that experience.
Well, I didn't really have any, idea that I would ever start a record company. That just kind of fell into my lap, because I was trying to help out a friend of mine's son who was, just starting out with a band, and then he decided to expand a little bit, and that just kind of morphed into a record company. We started out with heavy metal, because that's the influences that I had with the kid, and it gradually morphed into singer-songwriting, and then eventually I added a couple partners, a couple of very competent partners, and we started doing rockabilly, basically.
Mm-hmm. And do you still work with those partners today musically, or?
Oh, no, not at all. No, we dissolved the company, I suppose, right at the turn of the century. And, I keep in contact with them, especially one. Dave Wolf is his name, and he does a lot of indie stuff himself.
Mm-hmm. So what led to you creating your own, and in a very different style, as I said? I don't think I hear heavy metal.
No. It kind of happened by accident. I'm mentoring a kid up here, a wonderful kid named Chance, so I got him piano lessons, and since I was doing piano lessons for him, I started taking him with him so I didn't have to just sit there and wait. And the piano instructor was a pianist of the church in Port Wing. And so when he retired from that, he recommended me, and that's kind of how I got into the church thing. Mm-hmm. And I actually play at two churches regularly now. One's in Washburn, Messiah Lutheran, and then the other one's in Cornucopia, which is Emmanuel Lutheran. And I play there, every Sunday. It's a 9 o'clock service for Messiah in Washburn and 11 o'clock service at Cornucopia. And as far as the club scene or the restaurant scene, that more or less was an accident too. I was at Nicky's in Cornucopia with a couple of friends, and after a few beers, of course, there was a pianist there, and I said, "Well, you can play as good as her. Why don't you do it?" So that kind of got me into it. I asked the owner, and she said, "Sure, fine." And so kind of expanded from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can go over all your venues in a moment, but first, let's hear something. How about My Song in C? Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, that actually, I play that usually every gig that I play at. I kind of wrote that as a memorial to my brother Tom, who passed away from leukemia a few years back. Perhaps someday I will give it an actual name other than My Song and Sea. I just haven't gotten around to it.
All right. Well, we'll go with My Song and Sea by Owen Palifka. Was My Song and Sea by Owen Palifka. He performs regularly at Thirsty Pagan Brewery in Superior, El Charro Restaurant in Ashland, and Morty's Pub in Bayfield, as well as at services at Messiah Lutheran Church in Washburn and Emmanuel Lutheran in Cornucopia. And you've got another one, too.
Yeah, at Mickey's in Cornucopia. I'll be starting up there again. That'll be the third Friday of every month.
All right. Well, without the venues you're going to, it doesn't quite sound like retirement to me.
No, it's not. It's actually been a lot of fun, and I had no clue that I would be doing this. It just, like I said, it just kind of happened by accident. And it's been a lot of fun, and, you know, I've met some really nice people doing it, and the clubs have been great. So I'm just riding this as long as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm. What are your inspirations in addition to your label? I'm sure there's other music you've enjoyed through your life and maybe thought you wanted to emulate.
Yeah, I've actually been a real fan of progressive rock, like Deep Purple, you know, and Aqualung. But my favorite type of music, and I do play this a lot, which is reflective of the fact that it's my favorite, is I like alternative music as well as my favorite. Bands like like fastball and train. I try to emulate more of the alternative style, and I think I've done a pretty good job with that. With, you know, with bands like Imagine Dragons, I play actually quite a bit of those.
Well, let's hear another. How about In the Garden with Chance, which I thought, until you just mentioned it, you were referring to Chance the Gardener from Being There, either the book by Jerzy Kosinski or the movie with Peter Sellers, but it sounds like it's your young protege.
Exactly, you're right. I met him up here. He's actually a fifth-generation great-grandson of Chief Buffalo.
Is he familiar with the story of Chance the Gardener?
I don't know if he is or not. He's like 25 now. I met him when he was like 11 or 12. And so, but anyway, so I kind of named this little excerpt that I wrote after him. And it was in the same key as In the Garden. So one time I just decided to combine them and use it as a prelude.
Well, here is, not from Jerzy Kosinski or Peter Sellers, In the Garden with Chance by Owen Palifka.
Thank you.
And that was In the Garden with Chance by Owen Polifka of Cornucopia. He performs regularly at Thirsty Pagan Brewery in Superior, El Charo Restaurant in Ashland, and at Morty's Pub in Bayfield. And tell me again, the two churches?
At the 9 o'clock service is at Messiah Lutheran Church in Washburn, and the 11 o'clock service is at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Cornucopia.
Okay. And where can we learn more about your music?
Well, you can go to YouTube, Spotify. I think that YouTube is a little bit easier to use, but all my songs, you know, that I have recorded are on YouTube. That's probably the best place to look for them.
All right. And Owen Polifka is spelled OwenPolifka, and I'm pretty sure you're the only one.
Yes, I am. There's not too many Owen Polifkas, like you say.
How about one more to take us out? You've got one called Rambling.
Yeah, that was a song that I recorded one late night, and I was just kind of rambling around on the piano. You know, I do that a lot, but this time I thought it sounds fairly good, so I recorded it. And on YouTube, I called it Boogie. I'm thinking Rambling is a much better title for this song, because that's basically what I was doing.
Well, we'll let it ramble us out. We've been speaking with Owen Polifka. He performs regularly at Thirsty Pagan Brewery in Superior, El Charo Restaurant in Ashland, and at Morty's Pub in Bayfield, and another one coming up, Nikki's Restaurant in Cornucopia. And you can also find him at services at Messiah Lutheran Church in Washburn and Emmanuel Lutheran in Cornucopia. I think I got them all there. Thank you for joining us, Owen.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. One thing we've strived to bring you on the show and in ongoing broadcasts are segments that paint sound pictures of our area, and what could be more descriptive than the sound of bird calls? Well, that would be knowing exactly what birds are making those calls. And a few years ago, two of our area's most accomplished birders joined us to do just that. I thought I could challenge them with a game show-style Name That Bird quiz, and the result was, well, let's take a listen. Can you always tell a songbird from a raptor by his call? Here to guide us are two very experienced birders. Dudley Edmondson is a nature and wildlife photographer whose images of birds have appeared in hundreds of books and magazines, and he is the author of the seminal volume about some of those people who watch birds, Black and Brown Faces in America's Wild Places. Ben Yoko is a retired physician splitting his time between Sanibel, Florida and Cotton, Minnesota, the latter just a stone's throw from the Sac-Zim Bog. He's guided many tours to spot elusive species worldwide. Welcome to Simply Superior, Dudley and Ben.
Hey, Robin. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Robin.
The definitive bird sound library online comes from the Cornell Lab's allaboutbirds.org. I am going to list the names of 10 bird species and play the song files of 5 of them. Each of the files has a number, and we won't necessarily take them in order. So, we are going to start with bird number 5.
My bird 5 is a crow.
Oh, I didn't even give you the names yet. Okay, so was that a cedar waxwing, a raven, a northern mockingbird, a brown thrasher, an American crow, a black-capped chickadee, a blue jay, a pine warbler, a common loon, or a bald eagle?
That was an American crow.
Ben, do we agree or disagree?
That sure sounded like a crow.
Well, we have one of Dudley's other activities, my bicycle, sitting here, and it has on it a bell that indicates that you are both right. That indeed was an American crow. And I won't begin to ask you to imagine what the bicycle looks like in the basement radio studio of Wisconsin Public Radio, Robin Washington's house bureau, but that's where we are. So moving right along, you both have file number 6, and we will ask you which bird it is. And I guess we could eliminate American crow. All right, our choices were cedar waxwing, raven, northern mockingbird, brown thrasher, black-capped chickadee, blue jay, pine warbler, common loon, or bald eagle. This time, yes, Ben goes first.
That sure sounded like hey, sweetie, to me, so I'm going to say black-capped chickadee.
Dudley, agree or disagree?
Oh, definitely agree.
Woohoo.
Yeah,
I love that bell.
All right, so we have eliminated 2, and we are 100%. The next file will be number 3, and please play. And the remaining choices are cedar waxwing, raven, northern mockingbird, brown thrasher, blue jay, pine warbler, common loon, or bald eagle. Dudley, your turn.
Yeah, I'm going to go with northern mockingbird, and I could explain if you want to hear.
I agree with Dudley, northern mockingbird.
And the asterisk is?
Yeah, the other confusing one would be the thrasher, but brown thrashers, catbirds, mockingbirds, if I'm not mistaken, all in the mimic family, and thrashers are double, so they go, hey, hey, you, you, me, me, ah, ah. They do everything double, and I noticed this bird we just listened to did things triplicate or more, and that is what clued me that it wasn't the brown thrasher.
Well, you clearly know your doubles and triples. So let's go on to file number 7. So was that a cedar waxwing, a raven, a brown thrasher, a blue jay, a pine warbler, a common loon, or a bald eagle?
That was the dry trill of a pine warbler.
Dudley?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So, file number 10, please play. Well, this one was surprising to me, but I'm beginning to doubt at this point it will be for you. So, was that a cedar waxwing, a raven, a brown thrasher, a blue jay, a common loon, or a bald eagle?
No, that was a bald eagle.
And Ben, do you agree?
I agree with Dudley. Contrary to popular beliefs, the call we usually hear played for a bald eagle when it's on video is a red-tailed hawk, but that was the actual call of a bald eagle.
Well, I certainly would have fallen for that red-tailed hawk. And not only did you get this right, you got them all right, which makes me wonder why I thought I could stump you two anyway. If I put in an easy one like the crow, it's because I put in a raven too, but you didn't fall for that either by a long shot.
Yeah, you know, we probably have 100 years between the two of us.
I know, exactly.
Of bird watching experience.
And listening.
Yes, listening. Right. It's fun to do these kinds of things. I love to challenge myself and have people challenge my knowledge.
It was a lot of fun, though. So.
It was, definitely.
Well, most importantly, you didn't embarrass me for what I now know was a ridiculously easy quiz. You're great sportsmen and even greater birders. Thank you, Dudley Edmondson and Ben Yokel.
Thanks for doing this, Robin.
Thanks for having us.
And that's it for this penultimate edition of Simply Superior. Next week, Wisconsin Public Radio Director Sarah Ashworth will join us to tell all about the network changes, and our theme song writer Bruce Nelson will share more from his prolific repertoire. We leave you now with more of the music of Owen Polifka. I'm Robin Washington, and as always, stay safe, everyone.